The gospel reading is from John 20, verses 19 through 31. When it was evening on that day, the first day of the week, and the doors of the house where the disciples had met were locked for fear that the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." After he said this, he showed them his hands and his side. Then the disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, so I send you." When he said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained." But Thomas, who was called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands, and put my finger in the mark of the nails, and my hands in his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through believing you may have life in his name. The word of the Lord.
Well, as we heard the gospel story in the beginning of it, fear and doubt were probably what the disciples were feeling after Jesus died and they're hiding away in their room. And of course, that wasn't just something the disciples had to go through. Fear and doubt are things that are very much alive in our own culture. And I'd say right now in our culture in this country, fear and doubt are alive in a big way. And a lot of people who work in different fields of life have figured out that fear and doubt are actually great motivators to try to change people's views by using them. So let's think about some ways that our culture uses fear and doubt. Think about when you turn on the TV and you see a commercial for something, and how many times does the commercial play on our doubts about ourselves or our fears about our lives, right? You know, you see a picture of someone and like, they used to look like this. Don't you want to look better than that? You could take this product and then you'll look like this, right? So getting us to question how we look and think, well, do I need to look better than I do? Or saying, aren't you unhappy without this product? Don't you need to buy this and then you'll be more happy and more fulfilled and you'll have more fun? So certainly commercials, ads play on our fears and our doubts. Think about the news, how all the cable news programs nowadays permanently have a breaking news thing on the bottom. You know, something's happened. And it's always pretty much bad news. It's always something negative that's happened, right? ISIS is going to destroy us. The killer bees are coming. The Zika virus is going to take over and hurt all our children. So the news have figured out that if you want to sell, if you want to get people to watch, make people afraid all the time that something is coming to get them. We're also in a year where we have presidential candidates campaigning to become our next president. And they also know that if you tell people that life is pretty good and I'll help make it a little better, that doesn't sell, right? You need to get people afraid. And so pretty much all the presidential candidates are telling us, vote for me and my party and the world will be great. Vote for the other party and the world will just explode. Everything will fall apart and America will be destroyed. So in a big way in our own culture, fear and doubt are all around us and are being messaged to us all the time. Well, as I mentioned as I opened, fear and doubt were also something that people certainly felt in Jesus' day. And probably nowhere more than the disciples after Jesus died and before he rose from the dead. That's where we meet them today in this room. They've locked themselves away in a room because Jesus has been crucified and their leader, in other words, has been executed. And he came with this message of good news that there's going to be salvation. But for the disciples, it must have seemed like that had been disproven. Goodness had not defeated evil as far as they could tell. It seemed like evil had defeated good and their leader had been killed. And so they must have been thinking as they locked themselves away in that room that not only are we sad about Jesus having been killed, but we might be next, right? We're his closest followers. And so fear and doubt must have defined the disciples' lives as they locked those doors and cut themselves off from the rest of the world, just trying to stay safe. Now, as I mentioned fear and doubt, and you know, quite frankly, I'm going to spend a lot of my sermon talking about how Jesus wants to bring us out of fear and doubt, I do need to lift up that fear and doubt are not all bad, even though we often hear them as negative words. For one thing, fear and doubt are unavoidable. You'll never meet someone in the world who's never afraid. And in fact, if you did meet someone who's never afraid, there'd be something wrong with them, right? If you have no fear and doubt in your life, if you're not afraid of anything, there's something wrong with you because, of course, dangers and pitfalls are a part of life, and a certain amount of caution and thoughtfulness can be a good thing. So fear can be a good motivator if it's kept in check. Likewise, doubt is a universal experience, not just in our lives of faith, but just sometimes we doubt what we heard before and we start to question ourselves. And questions are good things. We should ask questions of our faith and our understandings because this can lead to a deeper understanding of the world. So I do want to lift up that some fear and doubt are okay. They can be healthy. But the problem is when fear and doubt become the very centers of how we live and how we think. Because just like we see in this story of the disciples, when fear and doubt take over, it tends to lead us to lock our doors and close ourselves off from the rest of the world and cut ourselves off from relationships with others. And if we think of our life of faith and how Jesus wants us to reach out to people, how are we going to be any good in ministry if we've cut ourselves off from our neighbors because of our fear? So today I'd like to ponder with you about how, yes, sometimes fear and doubt can be healthy, but how other times fear and doubt can start to take over and start controlling our lives in a negative way. I was thinking about how about a year ago, I was hanging out with our youth. We do this kind of joint youth group called Wings, which is our kids from our church and also kids from other Lutheran churches. We get together and sometimes we play games when we come together. And this particular day, we were playing a really fun game called the Bigger and Better Scavenger Hunt. The way it works is you give each kid or each group of kids a hanger, a clothes hanger, and you send them out into the neighborhoods with the instructions. What we want you to do is go from house to house, knock on the door, and say, do you have anything bigger and better? And so you trade the item that you have to try to get something bigger or better. And so it's amazing, you know, these kids go out with a hanger, and they start trading, and by the time they come back, they have some really cool stuff. I mean, they might come back with a bike. They might come back with a CD player, so something quite a bit more valuable than the hanger that they began with. So as they came back, they were sharing stories about how so many people were open. They would open their doors. They were generous. They were friendly, and how wonderful this was. And, of course, this is why they ended up with these great items at the end. But then they also shared when they came back about how some people were not very open. Some people, they could see they were there, and they knocked on the doors, and these people just wouldn't open their doors. They weren't interested. Other people did open their doors, but they came out, and they said, why are you on my lawn? Get out of here. Don't be asking me for anything. And I would claim that you could pretty much notice a difference between people who have their fears and their doubts in check, and those who are controlled by their fears and doubts. Again, I'm not saying that any of us have no fear and doubt. We all have some. But you can see when people are completely controlled by them and that has taken over their life. And one thing I want to propose to you today is that as Easter people, as Christians, as people who know the risen Christ, one of the things that Jesus wants to help us with is dealing with our fear and our doubt in a healthy way. Like I said before, after Jesus' death and before the disciples saw him raised again, fear and doubt were the guiding principles of their lives. This is why they closed their doors and locked themselves away. And that's where we come to when the story begins. And of course, Jesus has risen from the dead, and he wants to visit them. And the problem is that they're locked away in their room. And so what does Jesus do? He walks through their walls, right? He walks right through those walls, and he confronts their fear with his presence of pure grace. And he says these beautiful words. He says, "Peace be with you, as the Father has sent me, so I send you." So in other words, Jesus' response to the disciples' fear and doubt is to walk through those walls of fear and to order them to open up their doors and to go back into the world with this message of peace. Now, of course, we hear this famous part of the story where we meet who we call Doubting Thomas sometimes. Thomas wasn't there for this event, and when the other disciples say, "Hey, we've seen the Lord, he's back, he's alive," naturally, Thomas doesn't believe him. We wouldn't either, right? None of us would believe someone if we went to a funeral and someone had died, and then the next day someone says, "Hey, you know Johnny who was dead? Yeah, he's alive again," right? None of us would believe that, and Thomas doesn't either. He has his doubts. And so we see in this story how Jesus returns again, once again saying, "Peace be with you," and he appears also to Thomas. He lets Thomas touch his wounds in his wrists and in his sides in order to overcome Thomas's doubts and fears. So that's our gospel story today, this story of being transformed from fear into opening their doors and going out into the world. And what I want to do also is compare that story and where it begins for the disciples with the story from Acts. You know, the book of Acts is the story of the church after Jesus rose from the dead and then appeared among them. Then he sent them out into the world. And the story of Acts is the story of their being in the world and doing the early ministry of the Christian church. And so this is what we see. The disciples are now doing their ministry. They're preaching the good news. And when we meet them in Acts, they've been arrested. They're appearing before the high priest, which is the same people that Jesus appeared before he was crucified. And the high priest is lecturing them and criticizing them. He's telling them, "Didn't I tell you to stop preaching the message of Jesus? You have to stop doing this. It's the law. It's illegal." And of course, the disciples respond with this amazing line. Peter says, "We must follow God rather than any human authority." And he goes on to preach about Jesus and the witness that they have, having seen the risen Lord. What I want you to notice in this Acts story is the shift that's happened between the beginning of the gospel story and the story in Acts, right? At the beginning of the gospel story, they are afraid, they are locked away, they are in their room having closed their doors. But by the time we get to this reading, the disciples are out in the world. They've opened their doors, they're sharing the message of God's love, even though that message is dangerous to share. So in other words, for the disciples, once they knew the risen Christ, it gave them a sense of boldness. It gave them a sense of courage to open their doors and enter into the world with that message of peace. And I want to argue today that boldness and courage are signs of faith. Boldness and courage are signs that we're Christian. And if we look even through Christian history, we see examples about how boldness and courage has defined Christian faith whenever it's been real, whenever it's been lived. Early on in Christian history, within the first few hundred years, there was a plague that swept through the Roman Empire, and it killed millions of people. It was extremely dangerous. And of course, most people, when they saw someone who had the plague, they ran the other way. They didn't want anything to do with them. And people who suffered from the plague were pretty much excluded and ostracized because no one wanted to be around them and catch their disease, except early Christians. Early Christians got a name for themselves because they actually opened up these sort of hospitals where they would care for the sick, including people with the plague. And it turned out that one of the reasons that the early church grew was because Christians were known to care for people, even people with the plague. And non-Christians started looking at Christians and saying, you know, if the God they believe in gives them this much courage, this much boldness, this much trust in God, this much compassion for their neighbors, this is a God that I want to know about, right? And so their courage, their ministry, actually converted other people to the faith. I heard another story about how the people in Papua New Guinea, how many of them came to be Christians. Christianity came very late to Papua New Guinea. It's, you know, a very remote place from the Western world. There's lots of jungles. Lots of people live in remote places. The first Westerners to really show up there and stay were the British, and they came as an imperial power. They came with guns. They came to establish a colony, and they were fairly violent. I mean, they oppressed the people of Papua New Guinea. They wanted to take it over. They wanted to exploit the resources. And so they came. They had their Christian faith, by the way. These were supposedly Christian colonialists, but they were very brutal. So they came with their guns, and they established rule there. And the people of Papua New Guinea met these colonialists, and they weren't very impressed. And at first, they weren't converted to the Christian message because they looked at these violent people bringing their guns, and they thought, we don't want anything to do with their faith. But then after the military and the colonialists came, then after them came the missionaries. And the missionaries went out into these jungle communities, and they didn't carry guns with them. They carried nothing but a Bible and the message of Christ. And they started teaching these people about the love of Jesus. And actually, people started converting to the faith. And they started saying, you know, people came before who were supposedly Christian, the colonialists, and we were not going to be converted to their faith because they came with guns. And, you know, if they came with guns, they must have been afraid of us. They didn't trust in their God to protect them. So, you know, we weren't going to be converted by their faith. But we see you. You've come among us, and you haven't come to protect yourself with a gun. You haven't depended on violence to protect yourself. You've come only with a Bible and the message. And that God must be great who you serve, because look how much you trust him to protect you, right? And so people were converted by the faith and the boldness and the courage of these missionaries. Finally, I think more locally, there's a wonderful ministry called Ministry on the Margins. It's been running for a few years here. It was started by a nun named Sister Kathleen. She just heard there was need among the ex-prisoner population in this area. And so she started a whole ministry around serving people who had been incarcerated and their families. They run a food bank. They run different programs to help people get back on their feet. And when you think about it, this sweet little nun going to the convicts to do ministry, I mean, it sounds kind of crazy. How could she have the courage to do that? But she has, and it's grown into this beautiful ministry that serves lots of people and has lots of volunteers. I think similarly of the banquet in this church, right? This middle-class church serving hundreds of people who are hungry. So we think of all these examples and many more in people's lives who are Christians and the courage and the boldness that they demonstrated. And I think when we look at each of these examples, we just know in our gut that these are authentic examples of faith. And I'm guessing that in all these cases, it wasn't that the people who did the ministry had no fear and doubt. I'm sure they had fear and doubt. I'm sure the Christians who cared for people with the plague had fear. I'm sure that Sister Kathleen had fear as she started doing the ministry among the convicts and the ex-convicts. But the thing about all these people is they didn't let their doubt and their fears control their lives. They let Jesus be in control. If you're anything like me, you also have your own doubts and fears, and sometimes they do take control of us. But today we remember that this isn't the way Jesus intends it for his Easter people, for his people who call themselves Christians. Jesus asks us today, as he appears to us in this Easter season, he asks us, are you going to let your fear and doubt close your life to your neighbors? Or are you going to let the peace of Christ rule your life and open your lives to your neighbor so that you can do ministry in the world? I think we both know what Jesus would choose for us. Amen.